So, the second of our two visits on sea creatures now on the West Coast, and a very different fate for the second creature, where European green crabs are thriving, sunflower sea stars are completely the opposite, teetering on the brink of extinction. The International Union for Conservation of Nature calls the big sea star critically endangered after his disease killed many members of that species and other kinds of sea stars as well. Sarah Graveham is a marine ecologist and research associate in the Department of Integrative Biology at Oregon State University. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So we're talking about the wasting syndrome that affected lots of different kinds of sea stars. And any idea before that wasting syndrome hit the coast? Was it in 2013?
Yeah, it was in 2013, and it started in
Central California and then Washington. And then it actually skipped Oregon for a year and hit Oregon in 2014.
Oh, okay. Well, so we got it a year late, but got it just the same. Any idea how abundant the sunflower sea stars were relative to the other kinds of sea stars?
Well, we did a global population
estimates, and their numbers before the wasting seem to be, you know, in the, like, 7 billion range, 6 to 7.
But now we think about 5.75 billion of those
died, and I think we're at less than a billion left.
Wow. I'm kind of dumbfounded by the number. I mean, my jaw hit the floor when I first saw that. I wasn't prepared for it. 5.75 billion sunflower sea stars, you think, have died.
Yeah. We think it's the largest marine disease on record.
Ever on the planet Earth?
Yes, and that's just for one of the species. There were a handful of other species that were hit really hard as well, so we don't know the numbers in this, but, you know, add it up, and it's not a small number.
All right, you mentioned that the wasting syndrome was California, then Washington, then finally a year later Oregon. How quickly did the wasting syndrome otherwise move through the... I mean, once it gets in an area, how quickly does it begin to wipe out sea stars of all kinds?
Right. Well, it can jump from site to site pretty fast within, like, days to weeks. But
within a site, once it shows up, an individual animal can die within days to weeks. So
they first get these white lesions on their bodies, and then their arms start to fall off. They get droopy, and then they just disintegrate.
And that often takes
days. And within a population, we were seeing, you know, it spreading
and killing that whole population within
a couple weeks to a month or two. And then it dissipated slowly, but it's still lingering.
I remember seeing pictures of some of the more common kinds of sea stars during the outbreak, and essentially they end up looking like lumps of toothpaste in a pretty short amount of time.
Yep, it's pretty gruesome. Mm-hmm. It was we were seeing zombie arms crawling around, and the animals were just sort of melting into a pile of goo, falling off the rocks and such. It was sad.
Does it affect the animals any differently? I mean, does the sunflower sea star get a different set of symptoms at all from other kinds of sea stars?
Well, they have a lot more squishy bodies, so it seems like they
succumb faster, and they definitely melt more spectacularly. Some of the more hard-bodied
sea stars, like the ochre star, which you find in tide pools, the ones with five arms, it has a lot more arm loss and stuff like that,
rather than eventually melts.
Mm-hmm. All right, so but the sea star's got more to lose, the sunflower sea star, because it's got so many more arms, it seems like, than, for example, the ochre star.
Yeah, I mean, they can have over 20 arms, and they can be the size of an extra-large pizza. They're really big, and they're one of the fastest sea stars and one of the largest sea stars out there, and they are just spectacularly beautiful. Please don't miss one out.
Fairly popular, I understand, too, for that reason, because they are charismatic. They're big and got lots of arms and all that stuff.
Yeah, if you've seen one, you probably won't forget it. They're definitely a big hit with divers, and
we would take them to, like, elementary schools to have the kids pet them, and the kids thought they were just the creepiest and the greatest.
Creepiest and the greatest, you said?
Yeah. Well, you know, weird things
make you excited.
Especially with kids, yeah. It's the things, mm-hmm. Yeah, great. So what methods, Sarah, did you use to study the sunflower sea star populations?
So with this listing, we wanted to know, like, globally what was happening. And so we collected over 61,000 different surveys. We used 31 different data sets and had over 60 collaborators that submitted data, and it was just a huge collaborative research effort to try and pull everything together,
because this animal went from Baja to the Aleutians. And so having to, you know, connect with people internationally and all the different entities in the U.S. that study these was a lot of work.
How do you know you don't get any duplication? 61,000 surveys, 31 data sets. You got to do a fair amount of data checking, I would think, to make sure you don't get overlaps.
Yeah, we definitely looked into that. And everybody who manages their own data does those things too.
So we did a double search for false, you know, double
data. And probably there's a little bit of that in there.
For example, some data, you know, a same site could be
sampled by scuba divers one day and then by somebody beachcombing the next day. And so we could be possibly
getting the same animal, but
they were off. We always made sure they were on different days.
We are talking about sunflower sea stars with Sarah Graveham, a marine ecologist and research associate in the Department of Integrative Biology at Oregon State University. Sunflower sea stars hit very, very hard by the sea star wasting syndrome that hit the West Coast starting in 2013, recently called critically endangered by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, based on the research that Sarah and her associates brought in. You can join this conversation on the Exchange. Your questions, your comments are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we got the numbers. You think there might have been 7 billion sunflower sea stars before and 5.75 billion lost. So what's that in a percentage basis?
90.6. So I think that the 7 billion is a little high. Probably you're definitely lower than a billion left. And the percent decline was around 90.6 globally. But that was really variable among regions.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, how variable from Baja to the Aleutians, the range of the sunflower sea star? I mean, are there any areas where you can actually see a couple within a few feet of each other?
Yeah. So there are places.
They're not near us. So you have to go all the way up to the Hood River Canal and Salish Sea now before you can find any. We have pockets of them left in that area.
And then once you get up into British Columbia,
they start being, you know, more pockets.
And then in Alaska, it seems like they are still there, you know, albeit at like a much lower density than they used to be.
So does that indicate that they do a little better in colder water?
That is actually the
next question. So we are working on some models now
to test that exactly whether
water temperature has much to do with it. What's clear is warmer water causes them to die faster and perhaps get sick more quickly. It may not be that climate change or warm water events caused the initial triggered the outbreak, but what makes it clear, what is very clear, is that it makes it worse. And so what we've seen is that populations, you know, in the southern half, really, of its range. So from coastal Washington down, essentially, we're wiped out entirely.
And as you go north,
they become, it wasn't as bad.
So,
but it was still pretty bad.
Yeah, that is bad. So essentially, you know, looking for a sunflower sea star anywhere south of the Columbia River, you're probably going to be out of luck unless you spend a lot of time.
Correct. I mean, I think I know of, I can count them on my hand, the number of reports I know of in the last 2 years from coastal Washington down.
So are the sunflower sea stars officially protected?
So they are assessed as critically endangered, but that doesn't actually, with this IUCN listing, it's an international body, and it's more for informational purposes, and it doesn't confer any legal protections.
And we actually thought
seriously about going after Endangered Species Act protections,
which would give it legal
protections. But, you know,
as much as
it certainly is, it would qualify, that would come with perhaps some roadblocks that we would want to avoid and wouldn't be
helpful, right? So if it's
listed as endangered in the United States, it's, you know, illegal to pick one up. And these guys get in crab traps and, you know, folks find them on the beach. And we don't think that human action, you know, accidentally catching them in a crab trap or, and there's nobody that fishes them is the issue. It's really a
disease plus maybe some environmental causes.
And we don't need to change an individual's human actions to
save the species. We need to have visibility, money,
things like this to allow us to do some science and restoration.
It sounds
that
like
it's not necessarily true if you put it in for the Endangered Species Act in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're conscious of the politics there as well as the legal implications.
Yeah, politics. And I honestly, we want folks who do fishing to be partners in this. We would love if folks who find them while they're out in the coast and hunting crab or fishing for crab, let us know if they find them. Or even at some point, we may even start to use that
as a way to monitor the population actively or
collect them and use those guys for breeding or for concentrating.
Well, let's talk about approaches then. I mean, at this point, I mean, is the number too low in some places for them to come back by themselves?
Yes, at least in Oregon. So there are no signs that any of the populations anywhere have started to recover.
So what we have now is probably just survivors for the most part. There are pockets where babies have come back,
but they're few and far between, and they haven't had it. You know, notable impact on the population anywhere yet, even up in Alaska. And in Oregon and most of coastal contiguous U.S., we think they don't have a good chance of coming back with
better health. And that's
because there's really no adults left to make any babies. And we are in the
process of trying to figure out how to do exactly that, make some sea star babies.
How prolific are they? I mean, are they fairly fertile when conditions are good, or are they the kind that need some time and space?
So they'll make millions of eggs. The females are really big, and they're just full of eggs when they're ripe. The issue is
more along the lines of they have to be close to
enough to a male to fertilize, and so we need them to be in an aggregation for it to be successful. And it seems like they're pretty long-lived, so, you know, one the size of your hand could be about 5.
But one the size of an extra large peach that could be decades old.
And we need to have those decades-old
females
to be making those millions and billions of eggs
in a population. And right now, those guys are just not there.
Sarah Graveman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a marine ecologist, telling us about sunflower sea stars and how much they've been vanishing, a 90.6% decline in the populations estimated from 61,000 population surveys and 31 data sets. That's billions of sunflower sea stars killed by the sea star wasting syndrome starting in 2013. So has there been any reoccurrence, Sarah, of the wasting syndrome?
It never really went away, so it certainly went down, and we're not seeing it in outbreak proportions like we did. But, you know, you can go out to the tide pools pretty much anywhere and find oyster stars, especially with wasting symptoms. It's hovering, I'd say, like around 5-ish percent of symptomatic animals or less for the most of the time. But that means that it's still out there, and it could still be hurting our sunflower sea stars.
Do we know its cause? It's a bacteria, virological, fungal, anything else?
That is a really, unfortunately, open question. Some folks did some great experiments right at the beginning, testing virus-sized cuticles. So it's just something that's small as a virus. And that was probably our best evidence of what causes it. So we think it's a virus. There are other who think it's microorganism or bacteria that are helped along by low oxygen and stuff like this. But I think that evidence is really, the jury's out. We really don't know what caused this thing. And unfortunately, that means we can't do tests for it and things like that.
Now, did the sunflower sea star take it harder than some other sea stars, or some of the other kinds of sea stars rebounding?
Yeah, yeah. So sunflower sea stars seem to be hit the hardest. In Oregon, we have the other ochre sea star, the five-armed one. And that one was hit really hard, too. The declines in Oregon were like 60 to 90%, but they bounced back in a lot of places. So we got a big influx of babies right after sea star racing happened. And so now those babies are starting to grow, and they're getting, you know, maybe the size of your hand or a little smaller. And they're, you know, 5 years old or so now. So those ones recovered in Oregon pretty well. We're on our way, but they didn't, that also didn't happen down in Southern and Central California for the most part. So even in some places that sea star is not doing well.
Okay. Talk about the sunflower sea star's role in the ecosystem, especially in kelp forests.
Yeah, yeah. So they're super scary predators that eat sea urchins. If you're a slow-moving snail or a slow-moving sea urchin on the ocean floor, these guys are terrifying monsters that come and get you. And sea urchins are especially the issue because they eat kelp. And right now, especially in southern Oregon, we're just seeing sea urchins go totally bananas. And their populations are increasing like crazy. And at the same time, they're mowing down kelp forests because they're herbivores and they eat kelp. And so, and then simultaneously, the kelp were hit by the blob, which was a warm water event a few years ago. And so kelp have been just hit from all angles and are not doing so great.
Yeah, we've talked about them before, about the fact that the sea urchins have run over them, and it's because there's nothing there to take out the sea urchins, in part, with the sunflower sea stars gone, which would have been munching them up at a pretty prodigious rate if they were still around.
Right, right. And one thing that's really interesting, too, and I'm looking at next, is the sea stars actually scare the sea urchins. So not only do they eat them, but they scare them, and they change their behavior and make them hide more and eat less. And so we're trying to figure out how important, you know, sea star slime is for making, changing the way the urchins behave.
All right. A lot of work ahead, obviously, to see if there needs to be kept at breeding for sea stars or something like that. But sunflower sea stars definitely really troubled. The listing we talked about, the International Union for Conservation of Nature is an international listing, indicates critically endangered the sunflower sea star. And Sarah Graveham has been doing a lot of research on the animals for the Department of Integrative Biology at Oregon State University. Thank you so much for joining us today in the Jefferson Exchange, and best of luck.
Oh, you bet. Thank you.
All right. Good to have you.